Are you satisfied with your understanding of sustainability? If you are not, imagine a journey together, a pluralistic one, with academia, innovators, startups, NGOs, all looking for solutions to the greatest challenge of our time. My name is Samuele Tini, and this is the Sustainability Journey. Welcome to another episode. Today, we are discussing a crucial topic for sustainability, fashion. And we do it with an expert, somebody that has been at the forefront of the sector for many years. She also co-founded Fashion Revolution, and we will understand all about it. And she's also a published author. So I have the pleasure to welcome Ursula De Castro. Ursula, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Samuele.
We know that fashion is one of the sector critical for sustainability. The footprint of the overall fashion industry is one of the, if not one of the biggest in our planet. And we want to understand how we can solve and which solution are there. But before, our usual question, who is Ursula? Can you share us your personal journey? How you have been involved in this sector?
Okay, so my personal journey is discombobulated and not the straightest of lines, because I did not start as I then continued. I didn't intend to become an activist. I am very much a creative from beginning to end. So for me, it was literally about recuperating and transforming clothes in order to give them another personality, in order to keep them as long as possible, in order to place myself right at the front of them and not just inside of them. So it's been my life as a dressing up box in many ways, where the clothes have led not just a series of actions, but also a series of thoughts. So I know that fashion is traditionally and historically considered quite a trivial pursuit. That would be because of the link to the feminine. But fashion is a lot more than that. It's the beginning of commerce. It's the understanding of chemistry. It's our manual intelligence that predates our written capacities in many days, probably predates language itself. So all of this is in the simple act of turning a plant or an animal into a fiber and then that into clothing. So I've inhabited this animal, which were transformed when I was very young, via a fashion brand, one of the very first ever to upcycle at scale. This brand was called From Somewhere, and we sold internationally between 1997 when I started it and 2013-14 when I closed it. I'm also the co-founder of Estetica at London Fashion Week, which was the first design-led area for showcasing sustainable fashion. And then after Rana Plaza, forming the community, the global community that is now Fashion Revolution. So amongst all of this, Ursula is also the mother of four, the grandmother of nearly three, and a reader of history and a mender of clothes.
Fantastic. Ursula, I can see. Also, thank you for this very insightful presentation. And you can see your passion and the depth of knowledge that you have in the sector. And we are discussing also a crucial part. Fashion, as you say, is an historical value. It's part of the humankind's since the beginning. And then now it has become under fire because of its footprint, because of this link with sustainability. But as you said, and we will discuss all your work in this space, I want to understand a bit, how do you see this relationship, fashion and sustainability? Some people say sustainable fashion is an oxymoron, it's not possible. So how do you understand this relationship between these two worlds?
That anything sustainable within any industry, which is the majority of the industries right now that designed themselves to be as exploitative as possible, to make as many profits as possible for those at the top, the word cannot be used. It is an oxymoron. It is an oxymoron for fashion, as it is for pharmaceutical, as it is for any industry that's hell bent on exponential growth and making money without redistributing it. Yep, that is an oxymoron. To penetrate those systems, it's bloody hard. But that's why we need to keep insisting, because at the end of the day, some people make rhetoric when they talk about sustainability. They imagine a past time when things were perfect and successful and nature and people friendly. Well, in fashion, this doesn't exist. There is textile, there is, you know, the functional fashion that was clothes making, utilitarian, and then, of course, is, you know, the fashion, the preposterous, the couture, the crazy fashion that we all see and that we all know, again, throughout history. But this present industry, from when cotton was commodified to when fashion was reduced to no longer a craft, but exclusively a money-making, globalized industry designed to exploit people and nature. That is why we have to talk about what can become more sustainable within this industry. I already have an answer for that, and unfortunately, it is not a positive one. It is very, very little, because an industry that has gigantified itself to the extent that the fashion industry has is only waiting for the meteorites to kill that dinosaur in order to bring in the mammals. But yes, the alternative is small, localized, indigenous brands, indigenous to all over the world, who are already coming up with alternatives, are brave enough to talk about those alternatives, are committed enough to invest their time and money. We know that fashion takes a long time before it makes money, but imagine if on top of it all, you also have to invest in ensuring the well-being of everybody that makes your clothes and the resources from what your clothes are made from. So it's an oxymoron for the fast fashion brands, it's an oxymoron for the fast luxury brands. It is absolutely not an oxymoron for the small, sustainable, innovative brands that are cropping up all over the world. And that's what's interesting, is that we have a multitude of solutions, but we are still keeping them invisible. And we are still just benefiting the ones for whom change will be close to impossible.
Thank you, Ursula. And it's really powerful what you said, and it's really interesting for us. And we want also to give voice. That's why also the point, to give voice to the solutions that are coming up, and probably I'll try to bring a different paradigm for the different sectors. And fashion, of course, needs change. And I think you have been a pioneer in this area from the 1997 when you created From Somewhere, and then you went on to the Fashion Week, the Ethical Fashion Week exhibition. Can you discuss a bit your first ventures and how those ones, which were, you know, also the perspective and the work, and how have they led towards the creation of your new and more comprehensive community?
So nothing is past, really. Everything is present. You know, everything that I've ever made, I still wear. And everything that I've ever thought, I still think, even if potentially, well, same as when I'm wearing things, you know, I wear them in a different way and I may think in a different way. But I don't see those as my past ventures. I see everything as my present. This is who I am. And this is what I was here to do. Not because I also particularly believe in fate or anything like that. I'm pretty happy with chaos and coincidence. But, you know, within my chaos, in this is me. This was my calling. And as I grow, as I mature, as I change, everything else also changes around me. So, but you will see that my passions stay the same and they're pretty consistent. It's just that I've used different metaphors, different unicorns to take me from A to Z via G, B, and F on this journey. So for me, it is always the first principle is, and this sounds really, really embarrassing even to really say it, but it is beauty. And therefore, an unconventional way of finding beauty. Beauty, where does it exist? What is beautiful? Because often what I see portrayed to me as beautiful feels everything but to me. So my brand from somewhere was about finding beauty in things that nobody else wanted at all anymore. And that was both fraudulent and funny. You know, I was selling clothes that I was buying for peanuts, having them transformed by the most incredible seamstresses because I could pay them a fortune, because obviously I wasn't paying a fortune, neither the fabrics that I was buying. So I had that correlation. So making beautiful clothes out of rubbish. But the two primary things within that process of clothes making was the saving that rubbish and the dignity of the person that made my clothes. I mean, the best compliment I was ever given by one of my seamstresses was, oh my God, I can't wait for your stuff to arrive because I have agency. I can decide, because, you know, when you upcycle, things aren't necessarily always the same. There's a lot of movement. There's like, you know, you can do something which is basically pinks and reds, but that would be slightly different pinks and slightly different reds. So when our stuff would get to our seamstresses, they were actively participating in my design work and the process of those clothes making. So those two very, very, very strong principles have remained with me throughout. So my entire fashion career has been about reutilizing what is already in existence in abundance, because we have designed this industry in order to produce as much waste as possible, and the dignity, the relationship between myself, the people who make my clothes, and the people who wear my clothes, because those things are all threaded together by threads. And those things haven't changed. I still look for those as the two main solutions when it comes to scaling up a more sustainable fashion industry. And it is the concept of upcycling as opposed to recycling. We've invested millions in recycling. We may now have some technology, but after 20 years of investment, we didn't invest in either human skills to collect those clothes, human skills to maintain those clothes, human skills to repair those clothes. We've just invested in a technology which potentially could be used in the future, but quite openly, technology to create excess from excess, which for me isn't good enough. So for me, it's still about our resources, and upcycling is a methodology and a technique which is autochthonous to mankind, autochthonous to every area. We know this from history and culture. We know that wabi-sabi and things like kintsugi in Japan is the same but completely different to mending in Kenya or Ghana or other area in Africa, for instance, where the concept is really, really similar, is taking what you have found and making it better by a process of transformation. And yet we still think of upcycling and repairing as the fruit of poverty, when in fact, it's the fruit of creativity. It's everything else that's poor. Upcycling is rich. It's rich in culture, in technique, in skills, in understanding of the fibers you're using, understanding of the tools you're using. So at the end of the day, even though it is considered an innovation, we know it so well because we've been practicing it for 10,000 years. So for me, there is comfort in that brilliance. And there is huge comfort in not being condescending and patronizing and letting everybody else think that the only fashion worth buying is showcased in New York, London, Milan, and Paris. So again, you know, that's why it's not the past, because it's the same heart that beat for those same principles and those same solutions. Same that in the past 20 years, there hasn't been enough investment in either, because it doesn't matter how rich you are as a fashion brand or how much profit you make. Neither the high street nor the high end pay their supply chain workers a living wage. Never. None of them. None of the mainstream brands you see, none of them pay their supply chain workers a living wage. Underline that in fluo yellow and in fluo pink.
Yes, it's really, and this led, I think, after the tragic Rana Plaza factory collapse in 2013, where I think many people realized that you have reacted to that, founding or co-founding the fashion revolution. And what is the mission and what is the vision behind this community? What do you want to achieve with that now that we are past maybe the 10 years after the disaster?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's over 10 years from the Rana Plaza disaster. We started activating a couple of months after Rana Plaza. But the 24th of April 2024 is our 10-year, because that's when we came out to our community as, you know, here we go, we're ready. And, you know, transparency was our first call. In 2013, when Rana Plaza happened, literally less than a handful of brands had any knowledge of where and who made their clothes. Obviously, that figure is drastically increased since the start of Fashion Revolution. So above all, since the start of our Fashion Transparency Index. So we know the brands are practically competing with each other now to be more transparent. And yet we also know from their scores that it's pretty next to nothing what we're seeing. You know, it's not yet anywhere near enough the type of scores we want to see in the categories we want to see them in. I mean, you know, I always bring this example, but it's only 13% of brands that publish how many actual pieces of clothing are produced annually in their business. Now, you see, no business can survive without that information. How can you account without knowing how much exactly you have produced? And so it's really cynical from brands not wanting us to know, because I'm assuming that they don't want us to know. I can only think that they don't want us to know because those numbers are grotesque. And, you know, and the ones that do publish, like Zara, who does publish, the numbers are indeed grotesque. You know, 8 billion people, and we produce something like 100 billion. Garments of clothing per year. So it's not even like, you know, as they say at the minute, you know, I'm really reluctant always with statistics. So there's always an approximately or a perhaps, you know, it's difficult. But they do say that even if we didn't produce anything new, that we'd have enough to clothe six generations just with what we've got. And I don't think that they're looking at landfills as well. So I'd say, if you say it's probably eight generations. That's not the point, of course. You know, we do want to make clothes, buy clothes, and enjoy clothes, but within a system that affords those same attributes, enjoyment, luxury, to the people who make them and the resources from which the materials are extracted.
Fantastic. And I want to know, which are the initiatives that maybe you want to bring forward with your community? And that you are trying to push, especially now that you have also celebrating almost the 10th anniversary.
So while I'm no longer in Fashion Revolution, I don't run the day-to-day organization any longer. I was the, obviously, co-founder and the global creative director, and I now just sit in an advisory position. Having said that, I left in order to achieve sort of more decentralized organization. I mean, to be honest with you, I left also because I find founders-led organizations, not my cup of tea. The strength of Fashion Revolution is in the fact that we are potentially the biggest fashion activism movement in the world, because we have a presence, we have teams in over 85 countries, I think it is 85. And hence, you know, for me, what really matters is the character, the motivations, and what matters specifically to those local country coordinators who are our strengths. Again, we have to stop thinking of fashion as this centralized, globalized machines that ultimately looks at what is happening in a very self-referential way. I cannot answer this question because the whole point is that our country coordinators can shine a light on those initiatives that are close to them, local to them, and important to them. I couldn't possibly know all of them. Hence, the creation of a global movement where the teams, the global teams, have that agency, have that impetus to actually discover and support whom within their own communities is worth supporting and pushing. So I would say, wherever you are in the world, look for your local team. We have a brilliant team in Kenya, for example. Please find Fashion Revolution Kenya. In Africa, we have several wonderful teams. And that is where you will really find the information that you asked for. Who are the organizations that are driving the conversation? The ones I give you are the ones you can read in the front page of any, you know, it's the Greenpeace, it's the Canopy. But what about those tiny ones making a massive difference where they are? Those are the ones you will find via Fashion Revolution.
Fantastic. And so we can advise the audience to go and check, understand, and learn. And you're also a published author, and your book is about to continue the discussions. It's Loved Clothes Last. I think it's a very important book, like offer advice for people and activism. So can you see which are the insights that you want to share with us and that are also actionable for people that are listening? Maybe they are not as in depth in the fashion, and they want to maybe change also their behavior.
Yeah. So it's interesting because when I was contacted by my agent to write the book, she said that she was wanting to commission a book on how to mend. And my immediate reply to her was, I'm terrible at mending, but I can definitely do you a why to mend. And that's the story of my book, in the sense that it's not so much about how to do things, is the importance of doing them in the first place. So it's the ideal book for anyone that hasn't got a clue about how to start. And believe it or not, people automatically think, because I had a fashion brand, because I spent most of my life talking about my clothes, because I mend my clothes for hours on end on day, people think I'm very good at it, but I am not. That's the whole point about me. I am a thinker. And of course, my hands are my vehicle to show what it is that my mind is conjuring up. But I'm not a technician. I'm way too fast. I'm way too impatient. And my entire career focused on cutting corners, which is why I have to employ utter perfectionists when I do work. But that's the point about my book. The point about my book is that it's not rocket science to understand your clothes, their story, and your impact, because it is your impact, in the sense that when we choose to buy something, it is our responsibility what happens to it after we've finished wearing them. We are in the fashion supply chain ourselves. So we cannot talk about a sustainable fashion supply chain unless we take into consideration not just what we buy, but how we treat it. In the sense that, as Mark Bain said, what was it? A landfill full of organic cotton t-shirts is nevertheless an overflowing landfill. So you can buy as sustainable as you want, but if you chuck it after a few wears, it doesn't make any difference. That's what my book says. That's all. My book says when you wake up in the morning, look at your clothes in a different way from two perspectives. One is emotional. So therefore, why did I buy it? Who made it? Those things matter because your skin is the most absorbent, the second most absorbent organ in your body. That's certainly the one that does it with visibility. So, and the second thing is your intention. So keeping your clothes isn't an accident. It's a verb. You've got to keep them. But it doesn't mean that you have to spend all night on YouTube learning how to darn. It doesn't mean if you're a single parent with four children that you have to force yourself to go buy secondhand clothing because it's going to be impossible. It means learn, find whichever system applies to you and follow it slavishly forever. In the sense that if you can't be bothered to mend clothes, fantastic. There are some brilliant menders around the corner. Find them. If you do not know how to sew secondhand, fair enough. Go to your school, PTA, Parents Teacher Association. Demand and organize clothing swaps. So there are so many ways in which citizens can activate from their wardrobes into their community and make a massive, massive difference. Now, I just want you to think about what this is and what it could be. So a friend is someone doing something right and everybody, right or interesting, and everybody else wanting to follow. Same is with gestures. If we all start doing this to our clothes, we do it well, we do it interestingly, others will follow. This slows down the machine, evaluates and reevaluates what we have, the work of the people who did that work, and is really a potentially very important solution to activate from an individual perspective.
Fantastic. And it's really powerful, especially bearing in mind the statistic that they tell us that maybe the garment that we wear is one or two times in some geographies, and then they leave. They stay in the wardrobe or worse, they get thrown away. So it's really a shifting perspective. And on perspective, you have accomplished so much. Now, I want to ask from your expert view, how do you see the future of the fashion industry, especially with this sustainability transformation that everybody, as you said, is talking about, but very few are walking the talk? How do you see it evolving? And which are the trends that you think that this industry will need to embrace to become more sustainable?
So it's a difficult question in the sense that there's a side of me that's quite catastrophistic and thinks, well, you know, like right now, what is going to last a long time of this humanity, this world order, this industriousness, the way that we have built it? And I'm a bit negative about that. I am one of these people, unfortunately, that thinks that there is going to have to be a massive, massive, massive shakeup before we can actually ameliorate. So it's almost impossible to have a vision because the vision takes into consideration what I know. And I actually also know that it's not going to be anything like what we know. And this is an instinct. It's a strong, ever an instinct of mine has been. But I can give you a wish list. And my wish list is, again, a combination of something we know and something we don't. So something we know is the concept of something that isn't unbridledly grown. So something that is grown with another perspective, and that is the perspective of well-being. So therefore, to be able to have the perception of that well-being, what it does to whom, and ensure that it remains well-being throughout, that it doesn't then suddenly turn into exploitation just because of the gigantification or the profiteering that has become linked. So that's one thing that I see. And again, I do see a world where our resources are treated and managed in a very different way. So the future looks something like potentially a high street from the 17th century, full of little artisans, each almost creating a part of a whole. So very much the opposite of what we have now, you know, the brand that gives you the whole world, that would be the opposite. And of course, you know, a different interaction between people that can afford to buy those clothes. For sure, small. For sure, I think upcycling will be the trend. For sure, we are looking now at many, many, many more alternatives. But to say that there's going to have to be a meteorite is an understatement.
Mm. And it's really interesting to see. And I, in the podcast, we like also to leave our audience with some practical tips. We have listened to you and we understand now upcycling, maybe looking and meeting the fashion revolution country offices and understand which are also the change maker and the people on the ground that work there. But I want to ask, I mean, which tips you can give, given your experience and profound knowledge of the sector for our audience, for lay people like me and others that maybe we are approaching and learning now what we need to do.
For those of you who actually are genuinely interested in fashion and have money, boycott any brand that is not sustainable enough and actually invest in discovering those that are. So for men in particular, that switch is really simple. You know, there are plenty of wonderful brands that do organic cotton shirts rather than normal shirts. There are menswear brands, again, that will offer repair, that are working with better materials. So for anyone that has money, it has to be about buying better. And actually, if we activated all the women, my generation, with a good salary, and we begged them to stop buying Stella McCartney as the only sustainable brand that they buy and really invest in discovering young talents, that would make a massive difference, not only to those young talents who really deserve the opportunity, but to the environment as well. And that's laziness, by the way, the reason why people don't do that. Because you buy online, you've never tried them before. You can't be bothered to have something sent, and then you might have to return it back yourself because, you know, they're a small brand, so they don't have returns as easily organized as H&M. But it's not even a tip. I implore you to do that. Now, again, Fashion Revolution, you can see local brands. There are many places where you can find local brands. You can browse your local fashion weeks. They often have a sustainability section. You can literally start a process of Googling. You will find organizations such as, well, many organizations that will give you that information. And that is extremely important, extremely important. Commerce is important. The right commerce is paramount for the future. And the second one, again, it's this story of maintaining, keeping, repairing, passing on. I mean, before you throw a good pair of jeans, consider using it for kitchen rags, for little mats that you can put on your doorstep when you come back in from doing your gardening or whatever it is. You have to be responsible for the end of life of your clothes. If you start with that mentality, that in itself is a brilliant step forward.
Fantastic, Ursula. And I think maybe one good place to start is the Transparency Index of Fashion Revolution to check maybe some of the brands that are there. And
no, it's not, actually. I apologize. I should have made that clear. No, because transparency doesn't equal sustainability. Transparency is exclusively about what a brand tells you about their own practices. So at the end of the day, it's them marking their own homework. So it isn't an indication of how sustainable a brand is. But of course, you can gauge information on what that brand does, but it won't say what they don't do, for example. So that wouldn't be the way. But there are little apps. There's a good app called Good On You app. And again, generally speaking, I mean, you know, if you do, you know, sustainable retailer, you will find a lot online. It's difficult for me to give any advice because obviously fashion is so individual. What I like, the brands that I like might not be right for your audience. Plus, we'll be here another hour if I have to start giving you all the brands that I like. But I'm just saying that investing that time is precisely what the fashion industry has stopped us from doing. You know, it's called fast fashion because it's fastly available to you. So to rebel against anything fast, you need to embrace everything slow.
Fantastic. No, Ursula, thank you so much for your insightful episode and for sharing with us your reflection. I think there was a lot of food for thoughts.
Thank you.
Change and really transform also our little habits and some of the consumerism that sometimes, even not sometimes, is pushed to us from brands and is not that sustainable. So thank you so much, Ursula, for your wonderful episode.
Thank you too. And I imagine you have a very international audience. So just to say that my book, Love Clothes Love, published by Penguin Life in the UK, I vestiti che ami durano a lungo by Corbaccio, editore in Italy, Choisir un mode durable, Edition Marabout in French, and Gelich des Haben, but I don't remember the publisher. Poland, in German. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
And all the links you will find in the description of the episode. Fantastic, Ursula. Are you satisfied after this wonderful episode? Let's continue together our sustainability journey.